Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm sure a lot of you guys remember the old ceremonial hunting tradition of eating the heart out of the first animal you kill. Meat from those organs are among the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. You can get those same benefits your ancestors craved via convenient daily capsules from Heart and Soil. Find out more at heartandsoil.co. And remember, use code MEATEATER for 10% off your purchase. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
Welcome to the Wired to Hunt Foundation's podcast, your guide to the fundamentals of better deer hunting. Presented by First Light, creating proven, versatile hunting apparel for the stand, saddle, or blind. First Light, go farther, stay longer. And now, your host, Tony Peterson.
Welcome to the Wired to Hunt Foundation's podcast, which is brought to you by First Light. I'm your host, Tony Peterson, and today's episode is all about how distractions can really help us self-sabotage our deer hunts, and we should probably do something about it. Have you ever heard of the term neurotypical? If you're young, I'm sure you probably have. If you're my age or older, maybe you haven't. It's meant to describe someone who doesn't suffer from a litany of mental health conditions. In that list of conditions that would make someone neurodiverse, I guess, instead of neurotypical, you'll see ADHD at the top of the list. ADHD is a topic that garners a lot of interesting opinions, mostly because it didn't exist as a common diagnosis until the 90s, even though it was around earlier from like the 1960s on, but it really didn't become mainstream for quite a while. It is now, and it's probably not getting any better with our widespread screen addictions and just the general content we consume. In fact, research shows that our attention spans are shrinking at a pretty steady rate. That's not good. And while it affects all of our lives in a litany of ways, it's also affecting whether we fill our deer tags or not, which is what this episode is really all about. Back when I was an assistant editor at Peterson's Bowhunting, I worked in the Inn Fisherman office, which is a sweet building that overlooks the Crow Wing River in north central Minnesota. It's surrounded by woods and water, and it didn't take me long to figure out that the smallie and muskie population within 100 yards of my cubicle was way overlooked and well worth a little fishing effort. We also had a full archery range at the office. And since I worked as a bow hunting editor, it was literally part of my job to step outside and shoot a couple dozen arrows. I've had a few different office jobs in my life, but that one was the best. It's also the only one I've ever been fired from, which stings a little, even though 40% of us got our pink slips at the same time thanks to the subprime mortgage disaster wiping out the markets for a few years. Anyway, one of the coolest things about that office gig, besides the fact that my boss was rarely there, was that we could bring our dogs into work with us. I was living alone 5 days a week in a shitty little apartment, so having my golden retriever come to the office with me was pretty sweet. It was also amazingly distracting for just about everyone. And it wasn't just my dog that caused people to drop whatever they were doing and go love up a four-legged office mate. Other folks brought their dogs in as well. So you never knew who you were going to get to pet on any given day. That was a nice perk. until it became clear that the presence of dogs was just a little too much for us to handle. It also didn't help that I lost track of Lux one time and she interrupted a studio shoot for one of the TV shows there. The overall lesson was that sometimes, despite how adorable they might be, distractions aren't so great. We give in to them all the time. In fact, when I write these scripts, I have to shut my phone off because there's always something calling my attention, you know, from the weather to my cell cameras to my stupid curiosity to see just how many fly fishing selfies Mark has posted on Instagram before lunch on any given day. Distractions are real. They are everywhere, and they are robbing you of good deer hunting. If you don't believe that, think about the things you've missed in the woods. I'll give you a few examples from my personal life to not only make you feel better, but also just kind of frame this whole thing up. But first, let me say that when you think about distractions, we think about an object or a device or a golden retriever in your office. About anything can be a distraction if you're wired to engage with whatever crosses your plane of attention. But the truth is, being easily distracted might be part of our wiring, and it might be a part of how you are allowing yourself to be wired. We think of it as the physical act of paying attention to random stuff, but it's mostly mental. Just like so many things in life, like what I talk about all the time, working out, you know, running, swimming, lifting weights. They're all no doubt physical activities, but really it's the mental side that matters most. Almost everyone can do some type of physical activity. And if you don't believe that, go spend some time in a gym. You'll see people of all ages, all weight classes, all abilities. The differentiator for almost everyone is not whether they are physically capable of doing something. It's often whether they are mentally disciplined enough to keep doing it. People who don't work out say things like, I just can't find the motivation after a day or whatever. But the truth is, the motivation isn't as important as the discipline. Or maybe, you know, diet is a better example. Going full keto or Atkins or you name it, it's a pretty simple proposition in, you know, today's world. And any one of those, if you do it right, will provide you with all the necessary calories to not die. Hell, some of those diets actually do make you feel better, but are also largely unsustainable for almost everyone because it takes an insane amount of discipline and sacrifice to stick to a diet and ignore all of the delicious sugary distractions that are just about everywhere. In deer hunting, those distractions are all over too. We know we should scout on foot, but it's easier to run some cameras. We know we should work on developing our skills for deciphering deer movement, but it's also easier to plant a little plot of clover and hope that it does the work for us. It's easier to bitch about non-residents ruining our hunting than it is to accept the advantages we have over someone who lives 500 miles away and, oh, I don't know, working a little harder to find decent hunting by simply scouting more than the competition. There's so many different things in our life where we give into these distractions in hunting and it hurts us. And I've done all of these, so I know it. I'm not shitting on anyone here. These are real, and acknowledging them just kind of frames this thing up and makes you say, okay, I know I'm doing this to kind of take a shortcut, or I know when I should be doing this, I'm kind of looking at doing something else that I like a little better. All of those things add up to, you know, kind of a less than stellar deer hunting plan. We really sabotage our hunting in so many different ways. Part of it is that it's just damn hard to focus. Think about it this way. Most of us use OnX or some sort of mapping app for our hunting. They're amazing tools, but they're also ripe for distraction. Because you can sit down and look at hundreds of thousands of acres of ground in a matter of minutes. And it takes literally seconds to drop a waypoint on some spot and just move on. But pretty soon, you've scoured a chunk of ground via satellite imagery that covers seven sections of land. And you have 37 different waypoints on ponds and pinch points and other deer-friendly looking features. Then you slap your hands together old guy style and you proclaim a job well done. But is it? Does that translate to dead deer come fall? Maybe. But it's easy to get lost in second guessing and the paralysis by analysis when you have that much real ground to work with and to scout. It's too much. What you probably need to do instead is pick one section or even half a section, dig into it on a granular level to focus on what that has to offer you. Because here's the secret about not focusing on this whitetail game. You'll talk yourself into false realities that support your inability to focus. Now, not to go all Freud on you here, because I'm definitely not qualified for that, but look at it this way. Here's just an example of how to frame this thing up. What kind of buck would make you happy this fall? If you have reasonable standards for your hunting situation, then you'll have bucks to work with that would make you happy on any given half section. Hell, in a lot of places, you'll have bucks to work with that'll make you happy on any given 40-acre parcel, even if the bucks you want to shoot don't live there full-time. So is it better to focus on 3,000 acres when 300 is more than enough for you to try to figure out? Probably not. Breaking down properties into manageable chunks does an awful lot for helping us focus on the real task at hand, which is what I talked about last week, just figuring out where bucks live and like to walk. We are also always kind of looking for this magic bullet, but it really doesn't exist in whitetail hunting outside of putting up a 10-foot fence and maybe some automatic feeders. If you want to figure out wild deer in their chosen environment, a micro look instead of a macro look is often the way to go. Another way to look at this is something I learned in my old tournament fishing days. No matter where you fish a bass tournament, there will always be some locals in the mix. Now, if it's like a small derby on a Sunday, it might be all locals. But if it's a bigger tournament, it might only be a handful of locals out of 100 or more competitors. Everyone fears the locals. Well, scratch that. Almost everyone fears the local advantage. But it's not uncommon for the locals to get totally smoked by fishermen who live, you know, 1,000 miles away or more. There are a lot of reasons for this. But one of the biggest is that you can have too many spots, too many options, too many memories of big fish that bit on the docks one day and others that were suspended under schools of shad in 30 feet of water the next. Too much information, if you're not great at processing it, is a disaster. Now, if you can ignore most of the distractions and make a nice plan based around relatively current information and up-to-the-minute conditions, you can do pretty well in fishing and deer hunting. And now I know what you're thinking, so I'll say it. I know I often preach about options as the best hedge against stale deer hunting. Having 5 stands up is better than 2, almost always. Having more than 1 spot to hunt is always better, unless you have 1 hell of a spot to hunt. Even then, it might go away. So options are good, but they need to be managed. They need to exist in a way where they promote the right kind of scouting and the right setups, all of which will work with your personal style. And this is maybe the most important part here, personal style, because if you cater to this, you're going to just naturally push away some of those distractions and have better focus. Like, I'm a mobile guy at heart. I do better just trusting my gut on any given day and setting up for the moment than I do setting stands and blinds up way earlier and then picking and choosing them based on, you know, my availability and the seasonal timing. This is because I have a long pedigree as a mobile hunter. It goes way back to my teenage years when I started bow hunting. And for whatever reason, I'm just kind of wired to see new ground. I don't like sitting the same spots over and over. So I know to run a good strategy in any given state on any given year, I might set up some stands ahead of time if I can. You know, I usually do. And they'll be placed around some specific timing and conditions that I plan to encounter in the season. Maybe that's an opening night sit over a soybean field. Or maybe it's a November 1st sit in a staging area or on a funnel. Having some of those as backups or just built into my plan, it helps me a lot, helps me focus. It takes some of the guesswork out when those conditions do show up. But the mobile option has to be there for me too, even on small properties. Yet I know with my own inability to focus sometimes and my propensity for second guessing, I also need as much data about specific spots as possible to make those decisions about my mobile hunting. This is a tricky one because we often talk about in-season scouting and setting up right on specific sign. This works and it can work real well. But it's also often like an incomplete picture. because you have to know how to find that sign or what spots to check for that sign before you go in. Now, you can just stumble across something during the season that is definitely worth hunting, but it usually isn't quite as accidental as we make it sound. A little focus now on scouting to your strengths will lay the groundwork later for you to go properly mobile on October 7th when you stumble across four fresh scrapes in one small travel hub. So what is keeping you from doing this now? Is it taking the kids to 12,000 activities a week? I get that, trust me. Or is it just there isn't a real pressing concern now since it's almost turkey season and the deer hunting is so far off? Are the gobblers or maybe the spawning crappies distracting you while the deer are a distant memory? It's worth taking a look at things right now and focusing a little on the mission. That's what I'm doing as our snow finally, and I mean finally, starts to melt away. The window for real scouting is here. It's going to be a short one, but that's the way it goes when you live a few hours from Canada. What I plan on doing is walking several properties. I'll take the dogs out and try not to get too distracted by looking for sheds or whatever else. I want to focus on a few parcels of land, some public, some private, and I want to really understand a few areas on all of them. I'm not looking to master any one property because that's kind of a fool's errand. But there are spots I think the bucks will be, and I want to learn them better. I also want to see what's out there for other hunters sign too. But mostly, I'm just going to try to get my bearings on a few pieces of ground. Or more specifically, a few spots on a few pieces of ground. I need this because it's easy for me to get distracted. If you look at my waypoints on OnX, I have them dropped all over the country. And they're in places that I'd love to visit and hunt, but I just can't. I can instead pick some spots that will fit into my schedule and try to learn them really well, because that's going to eliminate some of the distractions I'll face later. Look at it this way. If you scout 10 new areas this winter, but give each one a quick walkthrough, you're going to benefit from it. But there's 6 months or more until the season, and when the season opens, how much confidence will you have in those 10 areas? Maybe two or three struck you as good, or even better. But that's a lot of surface level information to filter through into a good plan. Then it gets real easy to second guess, and second guessing saves a lot of bucks. Now, what if you scouted 3 spots instead and spent way more time in each one? Maybe that would be better, because you'd know what they contain, how to approach them, what trees are best for a setup, and when you should actually get in there to hunt. Maybe that approach means you can run a camera in each spot all summer long and further increase your knowledge. Then, come season, the second guessing and the distractions will be nullified. You'll make better decisions. You have fewer places to think about. That will help you drown out the white noise and go, man, there should be bucks bedded by that spot because it's this time of the season and the wind is doing this and it just feels right with the weather. It's kind of a quality over quantity thing, but it also plays on the reality that we know we will see social media posts during the season about someone who killed a giant by rattling and someone else who killed a giant by still hunting an island on some river and on and on. We will talk to our buddies who will tell us stuff about deer that don't really matter to our situation, and we will absorb a lot of not so relevant information. That's distracting and it's dangerous. But it's also going to happen. And how much that affects us is up to us. There's a wonderful tune by the band Bring Me the Horizon called Happy Song, where the lead singer sings in the chorus, I really wish that you could help, but my head is like a carousel, and I'm going round in circles, going round in circles. The general sentiment to that song, which you should not listen to if you have little kids around, is that he's accepted that things are all messed up, and he'll never get better because of how he's wired, but maybe he'll feel a little better if he listens to a happy song. It's tongue-in-cheek, because that's not actually going to fix his problems, which would take more work than just going to Apple Music and picking a happy-go-lucky tune to listen to. So just like rattling on Halloween because somebody like Lee Likoski or someone else killed a toad doing that isn't going to help you fix your own deer hunting problems. Problems, some of which can actually be fixed by figuring out how to focus a little more on the task at hand at all points of the year and by limiting some of the distractions that weasel their way into our minds when we should be thinking simply about where bucks live and how we can go there to kill them. Avoiding this as much as possible is avoiding self-sabotage, and that's such a good skill to learn for so many facets of life. Work on that in the whitetail woods right now. And listen in next week when I plan to talk about how you can actively become a better deer hunter when you're out in the spring woods looking to rearrange a gobbler's face with a 12-gauge. That's it. I'm Tony Peterson. This has been the Wired to Hunt Foundations podcast, which is brought to you by First Light. As always, thank you so much for listening. And if you need some more whitetail content, head on over to themeateater.com/wired, and you'll see a ton of articles by myself, Mark, guys like Alex Gilstrom and Andy May and Dylan Tramp and a whole bunch of whitetail killers. So much good information there. Please go check it out.
Hey, if you guys like to cook outdoors, and you ought to, you should check out the Weber Slate Rust Resistant Griddle. So this is a carbon steel cooktop that's safe for metal tools. It's pre-seasoned with food-safe oils and ready to cook on right out of the box. It's the griddle that stays ready, not rusty. This griddle heats evenly edge to edge, reaching all the way up to 500 degrees. Get fired up for your new Weber Slate rust-resistant griddle. Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today.